The Terrifying Lies Podcast with music and stories by Craig Nybo. Greetings, friends, and welcome to the Terrifying Lies Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Nybo. Well, we've done it again, you and I. Here we are at the finale of Season 3. In this season, we watched as three witch cultists of Cthulhu tried to sacrifice Nikola Tesla to bring in an epoch of human subordinates under an outer god in the musical Tesla v. Cthulhu. We learn the origin stories of two rock bands, the Punk Cats and Blunder Busted. We even fought firsthand against a gang of resurrected death row inmate vampires. And here's the good news, there's still one last adventure. Before I present today's story, I'd like to ask a favor. If you enjoy the Terrifying Lies podcast, I present you with a challenge. Contact a specific person you know who would love Terrifying Lies. Recommend the podcast to them. Direct message them, call them, text them, or let them know in person that you are a subscriber and that they should be as well. Terrifying Lies, so far, has only reached a small audience, which makes it tough to put in the amount of time required to give you the best listening experiences I know how to give. Please, if you like the podcast, support it by spreading the word. If it helps, be specific. Tell your friends about your favorite episode. Also, if you're interested in sponsoring Terrifying Lies, you can do so by purchasing a 30-second commercial that will run for at least 90 days. You can also sponsor an entire episode forever with baked-in advertisements that will never go away. Each episode of Terrifying Lies is timeless, so the podcast's audience will always listen to your message. Visit craignybo.com/sponsorships for extremely reasonable prices. Now onto the business at hand. If Season 3 of Terrifying Lies has a theme, it has to be music. Many of the episodes live in the world of Chops, a board game I designed a few years ago. I thought I'd wrap up Season 3 with another story from this world. Today, I present Showdown at Area 66 from the world of Chops. See you on the other side. Showdown at Area 66, historical account written by Craig Nybo. Chapter 1, Groove and Fish Tank. Dubstep shook loose a stack of school books from Darnell's shelf. Three of the books fell into his fish tank, splashing water all over his DJ rig. He shut the beat down and unplugged his system, worried that water would filter down into the electronics and fry the unit. He fished his school copy of The Count of Monte Cristo, his calculus text, and literature reader out of the fish tank and shook what water he could from their pages. He opened the books and laid them face down on his bed. The texts were lost causes. He'd have to pay for them. But he was more concerned about his DJ rig. He plucked up a towel from his bedroom floor and wiped the water from his racks, platters, sliders, and pots. He shook his head as he dried off his equipment. He knew that as far as DJ virtuosity went, he had a long way to go. The beat that had sent his books swimming, a beat that he had spent hours to create, lacked character. It was full of cliché. Darnell didn't even do cliché well. He wished he had pursued music rather than mathematics. He'd pay everything he had to be a band geek rather than a math geek. He could work multivariable problems on partial derivatives, but he didn't know how many sharps were in the key of G. Oh well, practice makes perfect. That's what they say, isn't it? He plugged his DJ rack back in and powered it up. The cheap amplifier that sat next to his bed popped, and a series of lights pulsed on the knobs and potentiometers of his rig. He punched a button, and his beat started up again, lopsided and flat. Too busy where there should be white space and too blank where it should be busy. He tried a few effects, but he knew that he was only masking something that lacked interest in the first place. He stopped the beat and collapsed into a folding chair that sat behind his bedroom desk. He tapped his fingers on the desktop and pinched his lips together. Someone pounded on the closed door to his room. "Darnell!" his father shouted. Darnell rolled his eyes. It was time for his father to tell him to turn down that racket, to...
do something constructive with his life for once, or to go outside and see what the sun feels like on his pansy skin. His father seemed to forget that Darnell was an A student, that he held down a job at Burger Blaster, and that he even competed as a mathlete on his school's varsity team. His father owned stock in the dream-killing business and branded everything Darnell wanted to do outside the institution as a waste of time. But at that moment, his father said something that surprised Darnell.
Darnell, there's some girl at the door for you.
Darnell checked his watch. It was 6:30.
Again, he'd let the time get away from him. He leapt up from his folding chair and pulled off his shirt all in one move.
Tell her I'll be right down, he said as he ran to his closet.
Who is she?
His father shouted through the door. Darnell winced and ran to the door. He opened it a slice and shot his dad an annoyed stare.
She's just a girl, Dad. Can you keep it down? You mean you have a date with a girl?
His father's mouth cracked into a grin that Darnell didn't like.
Yes, I have a date with a girl. Lots of people have dates with girls. Now keep it down. Tell her I'll be down in a sec.
Okay, son,
his father said, shaking his head and walking down the hall, muttering something under his breath. Darnell threw on a dark t-shirt and combed his hair, checked his breath, and took a whiff of his armpits. Everything seemed more or less in order. He picked up a pair of greeting card-sized tickets from his desk and looked at them. Tonight's concert featured Darnell's dream team. He couldn't believe it. Oscar Shinsplint, Dr. Faraday, and the Subhuman would be sharing the same stage. The three wizards of electronica had come out of their own separate bands and joined together for a limited-date tour. Even better, they were stopping in Darnell's hometown. He looked at the photograph of the three musicians on the ticket and couldn't help but smile in glee. Not only was he going to see the power trio of the century, he was going with Shari Burke, who was more than just a mathlete. She was a cheerleader and a mathlete. Darnell believed that those two worlds had only collided once in all of high school history, and they had collided at his school and created Shari Burke, the smartest and prettiest girl in Darnell's grandest imagination. Even better, she was waiting for him downstairs. He put on the black leather jacket that he only wore on special occasions and slid his concert tickets into one of its outer pockets. He checked himself in the mirror one last time, then went downstairs. Showdown at Area 66, Chapter 2. Planetary Conjunction. Shari sat in the driver's seat of her parents' old Chevy Citation, a car from a bygone era. Darnell sat shotgun, running his finger along the plastic armrest. The car felt uncomfortably silent. Why couldn't he get his guts up to talk to her? There she was, his dream girl, and he couldn't raise the will to even get down to small talk. Thanks for driving, he finally offered. He kicked himself. Darnell couldn't drive because he didn't have a license. His overbearing father insisted that he get his Eagle Scout rank before getting the keys to the car. He'd been working his way through the scout book, but it would be a year before he could mop up all those stupid merit badges.
It's not a problem, Shari said. So what is this concert anyways?
Do you like industrial music?
I like a little of everything.
Well, I brought a CD to show you some Dr. Faraday, but... Darnell pointed to the antiquated tape deck installed into her dashboard. Shari smirked.
My mom bought me this car when I turned 16. I guess I should be grateful. My dad gave me some tapes from his collection, but they're old and lame. Who's ever heard of Blue Oyster Cult, anyways?
Darnell scoffed in sympathy.
You record music, don't you?
Shari asked. Darnell sighed, tapped on the window glass with a wayward finger.
I try to spin a little. I'm afraid I suck at it.
I bet you don't suck that bad.
I suck, but I'm slowly getting better.
I'd like to hear you spin sometime, Shari said and gave Darnell a smile that prickled his spine. He couldn't help but return a big dopey grin.
Maybe when I get a little better. I'd like to do something in an assembly, maybe.
Whoa, what's going on here? Shari said, looking at a city block length line of people standing against a red brick building.
We're here, Darnell said. I should have warned you, some of the fans can be a little... extreme.
Shari chuckled as she looked over the fans waiting to get into the venue. Many seemed obsessed with black. Black hair, black lipstick, black clothes, black shoes. She couldn't remember seeing so many piercings and tattoos. Others opted for bright colors, neon crinkle skirts, pink fishnet stockings, fluorescent tennis shoes. A man wore a chicken costume, cigarette pinched between his lips. A gaggle of girls donned schoolgirl uniforms, their hair done in double ponytails. Another man, shirtless except for a collection of leather plates and chains crisscrossing his chest, stood next to his date, a girl wearing a furry cape and a plastic sword strapped to her waist.
"I'm obviously underdressed," Shari said, looking down at her jeans and purple blouse.
"Don't worry about it. There'll be plenty of normals here, too." Shari smiled at Darnell. He prickled again. "You can park in the garage across the street," Darnell pointed out, a parkade entrance half a block away. Shari navigated her citation to a spot on the second floor. She and Darnell locked the car and made their way on foot to the venue. With a half an hour to go before showtime, Shari and Darnell took their places in the back of the line. A gang of people dressed in black leather and spikes stood in front of them. The spike and leather faction didn't speak to one another. They just stood there, hard and silent, arms crossed, staring straight ahead. A girl wearing a panda bear costume moved in behind them. The girl smiled at Shari and opened her arms for a hug. Shari turned down the offer with a smirk and turned to Darnell. "There are certainly all kinds here. Diversity is part of the scene in the industrial world." She looked up at one of the spike and leather faction, a guy with enough biceps for both him and a buddy, full sleeve tattooed with what looked like vampires and orcs engaging in combat.
"I do have some medical training should anything go wrong," Charlie jokingly remarked.
"Did you pass your CNA?" Darnell smiled.
"I did. I start work in 2 weeks at a real hospital."
"Huh, that's great. Congratulations." Shari's eyes settled on Darnell's blues and held them for a moment as she weighed his sincerity. Then, without hesitation, she rocked up to her toes and kissed the corner of his mouth. Darnell blushed and moved his hands as if trying and failing to figure out what to do with them. Finally, he shoved them into his pockets.
"Tell me about this immortal trio of yours."
Shari pointed at a poster of three musicians taped to the red brick. Darnell's hands came out of his pockets. "All three of them are unstoppable, whether with their regular bands or playing as solo artists. They've been friends for a long time, but I never dreamed that they would get together for a tour, much less visit our town."
"Well, they certainly look creative."
One of the artists wore a superhero costume, complete with leotard and cape. Another of the musicians appeared to be more robot than human, covered in a foil moonwalking getup and wearing a retro space helmet that covered his face. The third of the rockers wore a kilt and biker's jacket, his hair done up in a rooster mohawk.
"They're the most creative men in music. That's Oscar Shinsplint."
Darnell pointed to the punk wearing a kilt.
"He usually plays in a punk band called Skinning Tuesday."
"Oh, I know them. Don't they sing My Heart's Not Your Shift Grip?"
"That's right."
Darnell nodded his approval.
"I love that song."
"So do I."
"But Shinsplint doesn't shine to his full brightness in Skinning. He's been obsessed with digital languages since he was a little kid. He can speak in hex code stream and thinks in blocks of binary. If you listen to his solo stuff, particularly his latest album, ASCII Armored Seashell, his mathematical approach to music will blow you away. Not only that, he builds his own synthesizers and has even designed mechanical biological components that he's had surgically implanted into his body to enhance his interface with his custom instruments."
Shari covered a smile that she didn't want Darnell to see as he turned and pointed at the robot-looking member of the Industrial Power Trio.
"This is the subhuman. His equipment is like nothing anyone has seen. His instruments are so different that some people believe that he plays on extraterrestrial technology."
"From Slaron 4.
The girl behind Shari and Darnell, wearing the panda bear costume, interjected.
"I'm not ruling anything out," Darnell said to the plush-suited girl.
She smiled at him and opened her arms, offering him a hug. Darnell backed away. He pointed up at the third member of the power trio, the man wearing a yellow and red superhero costume.
"This is Dr. Faraday."
He was actually a high school chemistry teacher. 3 years ago, he decided to leave public education and go into the music industry.
"What does he do?"
Shari asked.
"He's a vocalist and performance artist."
"And a whole lot more,"
the muscular man in front of Darnell and Shari said.
"Tell her about Faraday components."
"I'm getting to that," Darnell said. The muscular man nodded and turned back to his friends.
"Dr. Faraday works with chemical compounds. He uses a series of special microphones fixed with chemicals that react to salves and balms and capsules that he rubs on his body and puts in his mouth. These reactions cause what he calls chemically motivated organic effects."
"So he's a junkie," Shari said. The muscular man turned around, shot her a slant-eyed look. Shari raised a slender hand and waved at him. He turned back to his cadre and continued standing there with his arms crossed over his mighty chest, saying nothing.
Far from it. He uses no opiates of any kind. On a recent appearance he made on Music Hitmakers, the host asked him about the use of illegal drugs. His answer? Don't worry, you can trust me.
Shari looked away from Darnell and rubbed the back of her neck.
Okay, people, someone shouted from the front of the line.
Darnell pushed up to his toes for a better look. The voice came from a burly guy wearing a black t-shirt that read Event Staff in yellow block letters.
We're opening the doors. I need you to move in an orderly fashion. We got a sold-out show here, and I need you to work with me.
Once the doors opened, the line moved along. In minutes, Darnell and Shari made it to the box office. Darnell flashed his tickets. A man behind the glass stamped their hands, and they entered Area 66. Particolored lights cast a patchwork of psychedelic shadows on the foyer walls. The rancid raisin scent of bygone fog machine emissions caused Shari to wince at first, but she soon became used to the smell.
Do you want something to eat? Darnell asked.
Well, that'd be nice.
They went to the concession stand. Darnell ordered Cokes for both of them and a tray of nachos to share. Food in hand, they made it into the largest hall of Area 66, a room called the Astral Light. A background of industrial music mingled with the sound of 100 conversations filled the room. The acoustics of the place bounced in an eternal spiral of smeared-out noise with no definition or purpose.
Let's get close to the front while we can, Darnell said,
nodding toward a mammoth stage at the front of the room. Shari took his hand, which startled him. He looked down at her soft fingers, then up into her eyes. She smiled.
Lead the way.
Darnell weaved his way through the fans with a series of excuse me's and pardon me's until he and Shari found a spot right in the front. Three technical musical stations dressed the stage, one for each artist. The stations looked like equipment from three separate bridges on three separate spaceships in three separate science fiction movies. Long backdrops hung behind the music stations, bearing patterns that looked like words in an arcane language. Far above, an impressive rack of lights, foggers, and other effects hung from a trussing system, ready to fire the venue to life.
Is that a roadie?
Shari asked, pointing at someone on the stage in the shadows. Darnell squinted for a better look. It took a few seconds for him to recognize the man who sat in the darkness on a metallic sci-fi-looking throne behind the stage left rack of musical gear.
So it's true,
Darnell said, his face lighting up with new color.
Who is he? That's Oscar Shinsplint. He looks catatonic. He is. That's the beauty of it.
I don't understand.
Shinsplint has undergone so many sensitive alterations to his body that it's become necessary for him to sit on stage sometimes for hours before he performs. He looks like he's zoned out, but in reality, his systems are exploring every nuance of the room. Crowd movements, static and shifting acoustics. He's calibrating. What is that next to him?
Shari asked, pointing at a 5-gallon-sized buffed steel canister that looked like it should contain toxic chemicals.
He's abandoned standard biotics altogether. Lately, he's been working with nanobot technology to infuse his system with virtually intelligent, mechano-organic nanoprobes. He puts them into his body where they go to work on repairs and virtuosity upgrades.
Sounds like he's more machine than man.
That's the art of it. He infuses his humanity with tech and becomes something greater. He once wrote a paper on what he calls self-elected evolution. He views himself as the next link.
The house lights dimmed. Most of the crowd's open chatter died off as a single pin spot popped on at center stage. A man walked from the wings, tall, wearing a yellow overcoat and a pair of wraparound sunglasses that looked like they could double as a welding mask. The crowd exploded into spontaneous applause. The man walked to a microphone stand, popped the handset off from its clip, and held it to his bloodless lips.
Are you ready for the dream team of the century?
The crowd lit up with screams.
Today we are fortunate enough to be enlightened by not one, not two, but three of the most profound innovators in the electronica world. I feel that it is no coincidence that on this very night, Venus, Jupiter, and Mars will become a planetary trio. For the first time in years, they will group into a circle with a 5-degree diameter. Like the planetary trio, we have the privilege of witnessing the conjunction of three forces that baffle the imagination and push the lines of what we perceive as musical reality. Like Venus, Jupiter, and Mars, I give you our very own planetary conjunction. Please welcome to the stage the subhuman Oscar Shinsplint and Dr. Faraday.
The announcer put both hands in the air and looked up at the ceiling. The audience cheered so loudly that Shari had to cover her ears. As the announcer walked off the stage, the lights blinked out, leaving the audience in complete darkness. A low drone filled the room. A sub-frequency rumble rattled the cores of both Darnell and Shari.
"You're hurting my hand,"
Shari said.
"Oh, I'm sorry."
Darnell slacked off his grip. In an explosion of light and synthesized sound, three pin spots illuminated three onstage music stations. A musician stood at each station, the subhuman, wearing his trademark robotic gear and mask, Dr. Faraday, yellow cape blowing in the fanlight, and Oscar Shinsplint, who had, under cover of darkness, come out of his catatonic state and engaged his interstellar music rack. The subhuman placed his hands on the platters of his DJ rig and looked at the other two musicians. Dr. Faraday raised an odd-looking microphone high in the air and counted off a tempo.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier!
A slamming beat filled the room, taking Shari by surprise with its depth in frequency and complexity. She felt compelled to move from the first beat. She looked up at Darnell, who wore a boyish glow on his face, as if all his dreams had suddenly come true in one single moment. The subhuman took over the beat, going solo while Oscar Shinsplint disconnected a handheld keyboard from his rig and dropped its strap around his neck. He put his hands to the keys and added his own dimension to the subhuman's electronic net. The effect mesmerized the audience with a tapestry of sound and emotion. Dr. Faraday lowered his microphone to his lips and sang. Not words, just phonetic effects. As he sang, he touched parts of his body. With each touch, his voice changed, becoming oscillating and hypnotic at one instant, operatic and pure the next. He sounded like a mixture of man, machine, animal, and alien. Shari had to admit the effect reached by the three performers transcended anything she had ever heard. She also had to admit that she liked the sound and the over-the-top light and laser stage production. But the best was yet to come.
Showdown at Area 66, Chapter 3, Elation.
The music of the Electronica Power Trio thumped Area 66, hitting hard right at Shari's core. She looked over at Darnell. He danced more openly with every song, shuffling his feet, moving his hands, thudding and nodding to the rhythm. The music hit a high-velocity groove, sawtooth with distorted quirks and rattled frequencies. The new groove almost became too much. People around Shari and Darnell threatened to become aggressive. Small pockets of low-level moshing broke out. Nobody threw punches. The moshers were content with bouncing and shoving for the moment.
"It's time,"
Dr. Faraday said through his eccentric microphone. He reached to his belt and unzipped the maw of a fanny pack that hung just below his belly. The crowd screamed afresh. The beat settled into a 1-2-3-thump, 1-2-3-thump, 1-2-3-thump. The audience stomped along. Dr. Faraday reached into his fanny pack and drew out a fistload of green spheres. The audience cried out, reaching toward the stage. Shari leaned over to Darnell.
"What are those?"
she asked.
"It's called Elation, a concoction invented by Dr. Faraday. It's one of his trademarks."
Shari grimaced at the green spheres in Dr. Faraday's hand. She pushed up close to Darnell's ear.
"I'm not taking drugs."
Darnell turned away from the stage and looked at Shari, a bemused smile on his face. Shari didn't know how to respond. Kind of a concert this charming nerd brought her to. Had she misjudged him?
"They're not drugs. Elation's not addictive in any way. They're like scented candles that bring a sense of peace. Just take it in. You're gonna love it."
Shari adjusted her expression into a smile that felt fake. She glanced at Dr. Faraday with his fistful of elation, then back at Darnell. She nodded and turned to the stage. The audience begged for the marble-sized capsules in Dr. Faraday's extended fist. He
teased them with several flourishes of the wrist and feigned tosses. "Is this what you have come for?" Dr. Faraday said.
"Yes,"
thousands of people responded, reaching toward the stage, stomping to the 1-2-3 pump.
"Then I shall give them to you."
Dr. Faraday raised his fist of elation. With a downward snap, he threw them hard at the floor. Some of the capsules broke on the stage. Some clattered into the no man's land security area between the audience and the platform, where a pair of muscle-bound security guys stood like statues, their heads tilted back, their eyes hard. Some of the capsules flew into the audience to be caught by extending hands. The thrown capsules exploded into puffs of green smoke. Audience members who had caught capsules threw them at their feet, causing even more explosions. Shari took in a deep breath of clean air and held it as the smoke rose surrounding her and everyone else. The crush, the crowd, foiled any chance of getting away. She would eventually have to take in a lungful of the stuff. Darnell stepped into the path of swirling green smoke and drew in a deep breath. Shari watched the stuff curl into his mouth and nose all at once. Darnell closed his eyes and stood there, letting the influence of the smoke circulate through his system. He opened his eyes slowly. As he did so, a euphoric grin parted his face. He raised his hands and smiled at Shari. "Just take it in. Don't worry." Unable to hold on for another second, Shari lost the battle with her lungs. She opened her mouth with a gasp and took in a queen-sized gulp of the green smoke. She expected to wheeze and cough, but the smoke did not have that effect. If anything, the stuff felt syrupy and pleasant, landing on her lungs like rose petals. She breathed in more of the stuff, expecting dizziness to set in or hallucinations to blur into view. Neither occurred. She breathed normally. The smoke had no effect other than the pleasant scent, which Shari found enjoyable. "Let's go," Darnell said, wanting to mosh. He shoved the man next to him, a bearded guy wearing a unicorn costume. The unicorn guy shot Darnell an annoyed stare and gestured toward the stage. Darnell gave Mr. Unicorn another shove. Mr. Unicorn shook his head and backed into the crowd away from Darnell.
"What are you doing?"
Shari asked. He smiled at her, then spun around, looking up into the lights high in the trusses.
"I want to surf," he said.
Shari put a hand on his shoulder.
"I want to surf," Darnell shouted.
He grabbed the shoulders of the man next to him, a burly guy with a blue painted face and light-up sunglasses. Darnell tried to alley-oop up onto the man's shoulders. The man shoved Darnell away with a stiff arm.
"What's wrong with you, man?"
"I want to crowd surf," Darnell said,
a permagrin branded on his face.
"Give me a boost."
"No way, man, I'm watching the concert."
The guy looked up at the stage. Darnell turned to another fellow, a stocky short guy wearing a lab coat wrapped up in what looked like fluorescent colored vacuum hosing. Darnell tried to grab onto the man's shoulders. The guy wasn't having any. He shoved Darnell away and shot him an acid glare. Shari put an arm around him. She pulled him in close so she could shout in his ear above the horrible and thump of the music.
"Maybe we should go," she said,
flicking a handful of glances over his shoulder at annoyed fans all around them.
"There's something I gotta do," Darnell said.
He ducked out of Shari's grasp. Before she could say anything else, he disappeared into the crowd. She tried to follow him, but she couldn't elbow her way through the crush.
"Hey, baby,"
a bald man with a third eye painted on his forehead said.
"You wanna surf?"
He made a stirrup with his hands and offered Shari a boost. Shari turned down his offer and pushed up to her toes so she could snatch a glimpse over the crowd. She couldn't see Darnell. Dr. Faraday tossed out double fistloads of elation. Soon the whole venue oozed with his green smoke. Shari still felt no effects other than the stuff's pleasant scent and wondered what had gotten into Darnell. She continued searching for him but resigned that she probably would not catch up with him until after the show. She settled in, allowing the crowd to wash her back and forth with the ebb and flow of the music.
"Hey, it's that kid,"
a stocky short guy wearing a lab coat and vacuum hose said. He pointed up to the side of the stage at a trussing stack that extended from the floor up into the rafters. Shari spotted Darnell climbing the trussing.
"Oh no,"
she said to herself, began fighting her way through the crowd toward him. By the time she made it to the trussing, Darnell had reached an upper crossbeam and was monkey swinging back and forth, weaving in and out among the lights and effects generators clamped high above the stage. Security guards had assembled at the base of the trussing and were looking up at him, trying to figure out what to do.
"Darnell!"
Shari shouted up at her date, cupping her mouth with her pale hands. She couldn't shout above the music.
"Is that your boyfriend up there?" one of the security guards said.
"He's not my boyfriend. He's just a friend.
Well, he needs to come down from there right now. If I figure out how to make that happen, I'll let you know.
Hey, everybody, Darnell shouted from the rigging. I'm flying. What's in those green capsules anyway?
Chari shouted at the security guard.
Just perfume, guard said. Manager had him inspected before the show. Your boy up there, he's on his own kick.
But he doesn't take drugs.
Yeah, right.
Security guard scoffed and waved his hand in a dispelling gesture.
I want to surf, Darnell shouted.
Most of the crowd had peeled their attention from the power trio and were looking up at him.
I'm coming down and I want to surf.
Darnell rocked his dangling legs back and forth and worked himself into a penduluming swing.
Don't do it,
Chari shouted up at him.
Catch me,
Darnell said.
One.
He swung forward.
Two.
He swung backwards.
Three.
He swung forward and shoved off. Chari raised her hands, eyes wide as she watched him drop. Darnell extended his arms and settled into a belly-up posture as he descended. He wanted the crowd to catch him, but they did the opposite. They parted, leaving a hole straight to the concrete floor for his landing pad. Darnell hit with a thunk so loud that Chari heard the impact over the music. The band spun off into musical derailment after Darnell fell. The thunking rhythm ebbed off into a silence. The crowd settled down to less than a whisper. Chari fought her way through the hordes of fans toward her date. They let her pass. When she reached the clearing, she found Darnell in the middle of a convulsive fit. Spittle bubbling from his mouth, eyes rocked back into his head. She tried to move to his side, but the bald man with the extra eye held her back.
Let me through, I'm a CNA,
Chari said. Darnell let out a series of gasping coughs, then went still. Chari took in a startled breath. Is this really happening? After a moment of aching silence, the short man wearing a lab coat and vacuum hose finally spoke up.
Royal toast, dude.
Chari fought out of the bald man's grasp and dashed to Darnell's side. She crouched down to his motionless body and put a pair of fingers to his carotid artery. She felt nothing. She picked up his wrist and checked his radial artery. Nothing.
What gives, girl?
Oscar Shinsplint asked from the stage, crouching down at the edge of the platform, his sunken eyes on the fallen boy and on Chari.
There's no pulse, Chari said, looking up at the rock star.
We can't have this,
Dr. Faraday said. With a mighty leap, he left the stage and flew over No Man's Land and landed in the clearing in which Darnell lay. He moved to the boy's side, crouched down. He bent until he could put an ear to Darnell's mouth, hoping to feel petal-soft puffs of breath. Darnell lay still and lifeless. Dr. Faraday pushed up to a crouch and worked the buttons on his wristwatch, an enormous apparatus with a face the size of a jumbo bar of chocolate. He set the timer, an oversized red numeric digital display, to a 5-minute countdown.
Countdown, start. The human brain? It can only withstand 5 minutes without oxygen before damage commences.
Dr. Faraday stood up and brushed his cape around as he spun on one of his red boots to face his fellow musicians.
Gentlemen, there must be something we can do.
Oscar Shinsplint put his handheld keyboard down on its stand at his tech station and began to pace back and forth across the stage.
Do something, Chari said.
Yeah, do something.
The bald man with the painted eye on his forehead echoed.
You are a doctor, aren't you?
Dr. Faraday righted himself to his full height.
I am a doctor of sound and light, not a physician.
Oscar Shinsplint wheeled on the subhuman and put a hand to his forehead.
Of course!
The subhuman looked up from his tech station.
Aren't your keyboards outfitted with cold fusion impulse AI cooler packs?
The subhuman cocked his head to the side and fixed Oscar Shinsplint with an emotionless, robotic expression. He raised a wrist console and punched a short code into a button pad fixed to his forearm.
How did you know about that? My AI packs are top secret.
A speaker mounted to the subhuman's chest said in a droning, mechanized drawl.
It doesn't take a genius to know that acoustic polarities on separate subphonic wavelengths create a singularity and can't be aligned unless there is a discrete quantity of energy proportional in magnitude to the frequency of the radiation they emit. The math alone would take a 9.329 gigahertz processor to calculate on the fly the velocity your music requires.
Gentlemen,
Dr. Faraday broke in,
we are not here to discuss theory. We have a dead boy on our hands.
Dr. Faraday held up his oversized watch. The digital readout read 3 minutes and 23 seconds.
And we are running short on time.
The subhuman put his hands on his hips and made a full turn. He kicked an invisible stone on the ground and pointed a stern finger at Oscar's shin splint. He punched another code into his communication system.
Okay, I admit it. I am using cold fusion impulse AI cooler packs.
Oscar shin splint snapped his fingers and smiles.
I knew it. How did you do it? All of my attempts have failed at the subparticle level. When I attenuate the gentleman,
Dr. Faraday said.
Oh yes, dead boy. The doctor is right. We need to put this aside. Back to where I was going. Undoubtedly, your CFI AICPs use traumatic memory fluid.
That's correct,
the subhuman's communicator said.
Just a theory, but I posture that it is likely that many of the properties of your AI systems leave residue in the memory fluid.
That is quite brilliant,
the subhuman's communication system said.
2 minutes, gentlemen,
Dr. Faraday said as he knelt down over Darnell's lifeless body. Oscar Shinsplint picked up the brushed chrome canister sitting behind his tech station, unscrewed the top, and walked to the subhuman's tech station.
Break open the cores and pour the fluid into this canister.
The subhuman, suddenly understanding Oscar Shinsplint's reasoning, nodded. He reached into a toolbox he kept at the base of his keyboard stack and took out a crescent wrench. After a half dozen good whacks on the brains of the largest of his keyboards, a murky orange fluid spilled out.
Hold on there.
Oscar Shinsplint said and moved the mouth of his chrome canister under the pour. A whirring hum, like the horrible of 100 mechanized cicadas, emitted from the canister as the orange liquid poured into its open mouth.
45 seconds,
Dr. Faraday said, crouching down to Darnell's side, resting a hand on the boy's chest. As the orange spill ebbed off, Oscar Shinsplint screwed the top of his canister back onto the opening. He shook the canister as he walked to the edge of the stage.
Pour this into the boy's mouth.
Oscar tossed the canister over no man's land. Dr. Faraday caught the canister and unscrewed the lid as he brought it down to Darnell's paling lips. A mixture of orange fluid and clumps of nanobots poured into Darnell's mouth. Dr. Faraday took breaks to tap off the flow, closed Darnell's mouth, and massaged the mixture down the boy's throat. Swallow by swallow, drop by drop, he worked the fluid into Darnell's system.
What's that?
Chari said. Dr. Faraday raised a finger to quiet her. Darnell twitched. A minuscule movement. Muscular activity spread up his legs, through his pelvis and into his stomach. Dr. Faraday continued feeding the fluid into Darnell's mouth. The boy's movements became more exaggerated as he drank from the flow. The canister ran dry with its final drop of orange fluid and nanobots oozing into Darnell's open mouth. Dr. Faraday put the canister aside and backed away.
Live, boy. Live!
Darnell continued twitching for another half minute. Twitching flagged off to occasional sputters, then died altogether.
No,
Dr. Faraday said.
I've never lost a fan, not in my entire career, and I'm not going to lose one now.
He stomped on the ground with his red boots punctuating each word, overcome with anger and desperation. Each time Dr. Faraday stomped, Darnell moved. Not much more than a twitch, but a movement nonetheless. Dr. Faraday looked down at the boy, his eyes wide with a new idea. He stomped again. Darnell twitched again. Dr. Faraday turned to the fans gathered around the fallen boy.
Join me, will you?
He stomped 3 times in rhythm.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Darnell's body reacted to the rhythmic thunk. The stomping spread quickly through the room. Soon the entire audience joined the call.
Gentlemen, play your instruments, will you?
Dr. Faraday said. The subhuman and Oscar Shinsplint went to their tech stations and fired up a new groove, a mixture of bass drops, high warbles, and tweets. Dr. Faraday climbed over the retaining gate, walked across no man's land, and mounted the stage. He picked up his microphone and began a rhythmic diatribe affected by chemical compounds in his mouth and in the microphone's sound element. Bit by bit, Darnell got up, first rolling to a crouch, putting 1 foot flat down on the ground, pushing himself up to an unsure stance, oscillating in his balance, planting his feet firmly and closing his hands into tight fists. Chari backed away as he regained his feet, his pale skin gradually flushed with color as the nanobots and memory fluid worked from within to repair his systems. After a moment of swaying, Darnell turned toward her, He reached and smiled. Shari moved hesitantly across the floor and took his hand. She felt new energy in his grasp as he pulled her in close, put his arms around her. She half expected him to kiss her. She wouldn't have minded. But instead of moving in for a smooch, Darnell began to dance. She felt his lead strong and laced with all the signals she needed to move with him in synchronicity. They moved with elegance, front and center against the stage, surrounded by now gawking fans. Darnell shifted and turned like a finely tuned machine. Shari moved with him, dipped her and hoisted her into holds with unexpected strength. He threw winks and points at the crowd as he worked his way through move after move. Close by fans joined in with their own variations of dance. Soon the whole place rocked with movement. Dr. Faraday smiled at Oscar Shinsplint. The Scottish industrial star returned the grin. Dr. Faraday nodded toward the subhuman. The subhuman returned a robotic salute. The band played. The audience danced. Those present at the historical triumvirate's team-up remember the concert as a moment of nirvana at Area 66. The dynamic trio ended the show with a medley of each other's signature songs. The end of the medley wrapped with a mashup that drew even more energy from the already over-the-top crowd. The music stopped. The crowd blew up into a wave of appreciation that threatened to out-boom the PA system. Oscar Shinsplint, Dr. Faraday, and the subhuman took in the louds of the crowd, offering their sincerest thank yous, then left the stage. The crowd cheered on for several minutes, but the dynamic trio did not return for an encore. Someone faded on the house lights, indicating that the performance was over and it was time to clear out of the venue. The crowd dispersed in waves with a gala of smiles and hugs. Shari took Darnell's hand and tried to move toward the door, but Darnell stood rock still, looking up at the empty stage. Shari tugged a couple of times. Darnell remained fixed. She moved around to his front and looked up into his eyes. He stared off into uncharted territories. Darnell, it's time to go. The concert's over. Darnell's wits snapped back. He looked at Shari and smiled. That was the best concert I've ever been to, he said. Shari pushed up and kissed him on the side of the mouth. Something felt different about him. Last time she'd kissed him, he had shied away like a nervous schoolboy. This time, he did nothing. Just stood there and absorbed the kiss without even returning a hug or an affectionate glance. Shari backed away and looked him up and down. Is there something wrong? Darnell said. No, I guess not. Come on, I'll get you home. Most of the crowd had left, leaving the room in the unsettling green-tinted glow of the oversized fluorescent utility house lights. Shari took his hand and led him off the dance floor toward the exit. A security guard stopped them just before they reached the door. Are you the boy who fell from the rigging? The man asked. One and the same, Darnell said. There's someone who wants to talk to you. Come with me. Security guard walked away. Shari and Darnell looked at each other, then followed the guard. The three of them entered an almost hidden door in the back of the hall and walked down a long portal. They stopped at a metal door deep in the annals of Area 66. The security guard put a hand on the doorknob and turned to Darnell and Shari. Before I let you in here, I want to let you know that this is something that never happens. I don't need to warn you to behave yourselves. He reached into a cargo pocket on the side of his black pants and drew out two all-access lanyards. He gave one to each of them. Put them on. Darnell and Shari donned the badges and looked at each other, perplexed. The security guard pushed open the door and ushered the two of them inside. Three men lounged in the green room. Oscar Shinsplint sat at a coffee table, having what looked like diet soda, cheese, and crackers. Dr. Faraday ran a lint brush over his cape, which hung on a freestanding coat rack. The subhuman leaned against a wall, his forehead touching the cool brick, his hands dangling to his sides.
Well, well, well,
Oscar Shinsplint said, offering the two of them a seat on the smaller couch across from him. Darnell and Shari sat down. Dr. Faraday stopped brushing his cape and moved over to them. The subhuman turned around, leaned his back against the brick wall.
That was quite a fall you took back there,
Oscar Shinsplint said, pointing up at the ceiling.
We just wanted to check on you, see if you're all right. I actually feel better than ever. It's like there's something new inside me, an upgrade, or high-octane fuel or something.
Dr. Faraday laughed, patted Darnell on the shoulder.
You are going to be just fine, boy. I can't thank you enough. I somehow can't shake the idea that I was, dead?
Oscar Shinsplint said.
Let me guess, Dr. Faraday said. Long tunnel of light? You travel through it at warp speed? At the other end, you were greeted by some of your long-lost relatives, some of which you've never known?
Darnell snapped his fingers.
That's exactly right. How did you know? Been there, done that,
Dr. Faraday said, and rested an arm along the back of his sofa. Darnell looked over at the subhuman, still leaning against the wall.
Do you suppose I could touch him?
Darnell asked.
Be my guest, he doesn't bite,
Oscar Shinsplint said. The subhuman watched Darnell as he stood up and approached. He looked in the boy's eyes and recognized the change that had occurred there.
Excuse me, Mr. Subhuman, I was wondering if you might let me touch you.
The subhuman raised one of his arms. Darnell reached out timidly and touched the metallic fabric that covered the subhuman's biomechanic circuitry. Chari leaned toward Oscar Shinsplint and gestured for him to do the same. Oscar Shinsplint put down his cheese and crackers and leaned forward, a conspiratorial smile moving onto his face.
What is it, lass? Don't get me wrong. I appreciate everything you've done for Darnell. He's such a good boy and he doesn't deserve to die and all. But I couldn't help but notice there's something different about him.
Dr. Faraday broke into laughter, slapping his knee. He put a hand on Shari's shoulder and pointed at her with his other hand, continuing his capitulating chortles. Shari looked up at him, then smiled nervously at Oscar Shinsplint.
It's simple, really,
Oscar Shinsplint said, picking up his cheese and crackers.
Your boy over there, he doesn't have a soul. I'm afraid he's lost it.
What?
Dr. Faraday sat down on the sofa next to Shari.
Didn't you catch that bit about the tunnel of light? About meeting long-lost relatives?
Yeah, but I thought all of that might be in his mind.
No, Fräulein. Your boy, he died in that crash. And his soul's moved on,
Oscar Shinsplint said. Shari sunk into the couch and dropped her hands to her side.
It's nothing to be worried about, lass. None of us has a soul. We've all lost them, haven't we?
That's true,
Dr. Faraday said.
We're nothing but high-functioning biological machines now. Sentient but soulless.
But isn't that some sort of a crime against nature?
Shari asked.
Certainly not, unless you consider the music you heard tonight a crime. Fact is, many people lead long and fruitful lives without souls. Don't worry about your boy. If anything, consider his changes to be undiscovered territory.
Shari looked up at Darnell, her mouth curled into a smirk. The dynamic trio spent another hour with the couple, talking, laughing, sharing cheese and crackers, offering musical and technical advice. Darnell learned how he could upgrade his keyboards to at least a 65 on the artificial intelligence quotient scale with parts he could purchase from Radio Shack. Shari learned how she could remove a pesky virus from her laptop computer. In the end, Shari and Darnell left as friends and fellows with the three musicians. Shari pulled up at Darnell's house. They both got out of her car and walked to the front porch. They stood awkwardly looking at each other for a long moment. A trio of night bugs met their blue zapping fates to a bug light hanging above an old porch swing fastened to the ceiling. Finally, Darnell made his move. He put his arms around Shari and pulled her close. He moved in and planted a pleasant kiss on her lips, then moved away. A fit of butterflies escaped from Shari's stomach and raced all around inside her body. She smiled up at him. He looked handsome in the warm porch light. Are you going to be okay? She asked.
Better than ever, Darnell said. See you at lunch tomorrow. It's a lunch lady date,
Shari said. She planted another kiss right where it counted. Darnell went inside. Shari walked back to her car. She got inside, started the engine, and sat for a moment, a persistent smile hanging on her face. She removed the all-access lanyard from her neck and hung it on the rearview mirror. She shifted her Chevy Citation into gear and drove away.
This has been Showdown at Area 66, written and read by me, Craig Nybo. I have to admit, when it comes to composition, I'm a fish out of water when it comes to electronic music. Although I did have a blast composing the musical soundtrack for today's story. In the spirit of Oscar Shinsplint, the subhuman, and Dr. Faraday, I present another electronic tune. I call it Kiss My Assimilative Quantum Computer. Enjoy. This has been Kiss My Assimilative Quantum Computer. As I close this chapter of the Terrifying Lies podcast, my heart is full of gratitude for you, my dear listeners. Your unwavering support, your messages, and your enthusiasm have been the lifeblood of this whole project. Without you, this podcast would not exist. It's been an incredible adventure filled with twists, turns, and a few heart-stopping moments. I consider you not just listeners, but my friends. I hope our little community can grow. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being a part of the family. Stay tuned, stay curious, and hang on to those little moments in the middle of the night when you find yourself shivering and staring into the darkness. Until next time, I wish you sweet dreams, or should I say, sweet nightmares.
This has been the Terrifying Lies podcast. Please come again. You're welcome here.